time for Israel is Real. Two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. Rahel and Sonia focus on life in modern 21st century Israel, telling the stories of ordinary people living in, loving, and in support of an extraordinary land. Israel is Real is a community-supported program featuring interviews with local, national, and international celebrities, personal life stories, and call-ins. Learn a new Hebrew word every week. Israel is Real. Every Friday on 1590 WSMN, Nashua's News and Talk. And now, your hosts, Rahel and Sonia.
Hi, we're Rahel.
And Sonia.
And this is Israel is Real, the free voice for Israel. Boker tov lekol ha-mazinim.
Tzoraim tovim b'Yisrael.
From WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. You can also link to us on the internet to WSMNradio.com if you're having trouble with your frequency, because I know that there was a solar flare recently and that seems to be causing some interruptions. So try the internet as well, WSMNradio.com. And don't forget also to visit our own website at www.israelisrealnh.com. That's Israelisrealnh.com, israelisrealnewhampshire.com. And we're going to get right to it because we're very excited that we have a guest today again, and a very special guest. But before we get to that, we want to hear our Hebrew word for the week.
So, sofer.
Sofer. Yes. Tell us about sofer.
Okay, sofer, it's coming from sefer, from the root samech peiresh, which means to tell a story, which means to count. And from this root, we can have mesaper, which is somebody which is telling a story. And we can have sipur, which is a story. And we can have sofer, which is actually the writer, the author of a story, of a book, or whatever we will decide.
Ah, so I'm getting the hint here that...
Yeah, it's actually not for you. It's for the listeners. You already, I already know.
Oh, I like to play kind of the other guy, you know, like the Howdy Doody or something, you know, the little doll.
Okay, so, start speaking. Who is our special guest?
She's
today
pushing me along here. Yeah. Okay. I want to keep the listeners in suspense another second. Okay. We have here our special guest today in studio, a local Nashua resident, Shaiki Artzi. He is more formally known as Dr. Yeshaya or Isaiah Artzi. He's an Israeli and an American resident, as I said, of Nashua, New Hampshire. That's where we are. Shaiki is a son of Holocaust survivors. He grew up in Israel, where he served in the IDF, which is the Israeli Defense Forces or the Israeli Army, and the Army Reserves. He also participated in all the wars that were started by and fought against the Israel's Arab neighbors during the years between 1967 to 1982. There are quite a lot of them, and we'll learn about them as we speak with Shaiki. Shaiki holds a Master of Science and a PhD in Computer Sciences from the University of Wisconsin, and by day he works in high tech as an architect, a VP of technology, and he's a director designing products and data-rich computer systems for large companies. But in his spare time, if you can believe he has any, he has been writing his first debut novel, which we're very excited about to hear about today, which is soon going to be published in Israel in Hebrew, and later there are plans to have it published in English. Shaike, Boker Tov.
Boker Tov, and good afternoon in Israel.
We know you as a friend, and now we know you as a professional, and now we know you as a sofer.
Or aspiring sofer.
An aspiring sofer. So what inspired you or motivated you to become a sofer, to write a book?
Well, from early age, as far as I remember myself, I wanted to tell a story. I loved to tell a story. And as you go through different experiences in Israel, through wars, through different events and you lose some friends, or you go through very tenuous situations, there is a story that is boiling, and it has been boiling in me for many, many years. And I started writing, I put it in the attic, I didn't really find the time. And what at some point motivated me to resume my work was the book that I really loved, The Kite Runner, that was written by another professional, a physician, that is not a writer or author by profession. And that book, although it is told in a very different era, different society, that some of that is really unknown to us, it has inspired me because it has some universal message that transcends the time and the place. And I said, well, I think I can do the same. And hopefully wow. I can get to that level, hopefully.
Wow. We've had some other guests on occasion who were not writers either, or Sofrim, and they, you know, it's interesting to know how one suddenly evolves into that.
Yeah, once I started looking for publishers, I found so many, a professor of geology, a physician somewhere in Israel. There was last or 2 years ago, a very famous book and movie, The Reader, by a German attorney, who is not really an author or writer by profession. So many people that find that something in their life, as filling as it is, and indeed my professional life is really filling to me, it's not enough. Or you have some other aspects of your life that you want to try at least, or to get or to share with other people.
It's also easier to write today a book when you have computers,
right.
Word, etc.
And Google and Wikipedia when you want that to be absolutely accurate,
exactly.
Reflecting that particular
exactly.
Period, I can tell you, yes.
Let's understand a little bit about the book. And the question is, is it based on your personal experience as a youth in Israel, or maybe we understand it's a particular generation, a particular time period, which, as we said, was 1967 to 1973. Is this a little bit of an autobiography?
To an extent, but it is not. Let me first describe the book very generally.
Please.
The book is called Lechaim, which in Hebrew has multiple translations, and I really play sometimes on the words. Lechaim means to chaim. Chaim is a surname in Hebrew, which means life, and it is dedicated to the main character, Chaim Nawi, an IDF soldier that died in the attrition war in specifically on July 12, 1970, by the Suez Canal. That was the war that was fought between Israel and Egypt from 1988 to August of 1970. He died just before the war. Lechaim is also to life. So in a sense, the story tells the story of Chaim, his life, short life though, but his pursuit to define the meaning for himself, the meaning of his life after and during his service. So it is a story, in a way, about life, about life of a young person. To life, or Lechaim, means also to bring someone to life. So as he died, the author, the narrator, who speaks in first person language in the book, brings him to us and in a way revives him. As well as he speaks to his dead friend and describes life. So he brings the friend to life to experience the life that he is missing after befalling. There are two other threads that are supporting the main thread that I described that are also very important in the book. One of them is the very strong friendship that is created between the narrator and his friend. And as I describe in the book, or as I said in the introduction to the book, this friendship actually grew stronger after the death of his friend. And it comes really at the very beginning, on the first page almost, when the narrator tells about losing his friend, and he speaks then to his friend, as throughout the book, he speaks many times to his dead friend, and he says, "I loved you, my friend, Jonathan, my brother." And the other thread that I mentioned is the love. How can we have a book representing youth without love? Love between the narrator, Eyal, and the sister of Chaim, who plays a unique role in the story. And in a way, symbolically, really symbolically only, it resembles the biblical story between David Jonathan and Michal, Michal being the sister of Jonathan, the best friend of David, and later the wife of David. So just symbolically it represents, but it has richness of those characters. And the fourth characters, maybe we'll touch on that later, the fourth character in the book is what I would call the entire environment or the era. It's the songs of that time, the political events, the military events. It really tries to capture that era as it was, not as a history book, but as people lived throughout.
I have an observation. Mm-hmm. 1968, it was a very it wasn't a calm period all over the world. The students, you remember the revolution of mm-hmm. the students in Europe.
It is brought actually true.
And in Israel, we have this struggling for life. Right. We do not have this luxury to get out and to...
Right, but there are brought in different contexts. There was the student revolution in France, led by Red Daniel Cohen-Bloom, mm-hmm. and also the conquer of Czechoslovakia by the Russian forces after Czechoslovakia tried to get a little bit more independent, and especially the event of somebody that burned himself,
a student that burned himself in order to keep the honor
Jan
of
Palak.
Czechoslovakia.
Jan Palak. And there is a important saying there that one of the characters says, and then I found out that actually I said it in high school to my teacher. He told me many, many years after that he says, if people under communist regime come to burn themselves like Far East Asian monks, and they do not receive the communist regime, the materialistic regime, then that means that this will be the end of the communism. Maybe it will take another generation. Indeed, it took another generation, 20 years or so, until the communism fell. But the communism wasn't strongly instilled.
An empty vessel.
Absolutely.
So we have hope for today's turmoil and turbulence. Let's go back to the book a little bit and tell me about the characters. Obviously, it's a novel, but based on some personal experience. Are there any real characters in the novel at all?
They are and they are not. In the introduction to the book, I said all the characters and events are absolutely real, including those born in the author's imagination. So living with those characters for so many years, they became real. The only real characters are those that are mentioned very briefly, sometimes by song, by quote, by event, such as the Israeli Prime Minister Golda Meir at the time, President Richard Nixon, the Defense Minister at the time, the Israeli General Dayan, others like Bob Dylan, John Baez, The Doors, etc. Those are the
Doors,
real
ones. Too.
The Doors, absolutely.
Bob Dylan and Joan Baez.
Right.
As well as Israeli singers, Chaval Beshtan, Shlomo Arzi, those that mm-hmm. were
they are
represented
still today.
The
they are still performing.
And that's also uh-huh. something that, many of the things are still very relevant today. It's still, although, maybe we'll elaborate on that later, but although the book tries to be very authentic to that period of time, to the date even. If I mention a record or a song, you bet that song was played at that time, or that movie, Dr. Zhivago, for instance, was played at that time. If I mention a cinema, that cinema existed. In particular, I try to capture cinemas that were not slang words. Mm-hmm. The language itself was of that time. Yet, by writing it or by reading it, you will find that many things are just the same. I mentioned terrorism, I mentioned some of the songs. Many things have still relevance today and haven't changed. You ask about autobiographic. The book is written in first person, as I mentioned, and the narrator's name resembles mine. So it is suspiciously autobiographic, but it's not, because there are many motives from myself, from my friends, from other people, of that time. And in a way, it's also the autobiography that I wished to have. I was born to a very poor...
The life you wished you wanted.
Yeah, I was born to very poor but very good parents. And I wanted my parents to be more Israeli. Those are, so the Israeli aristocracy of, at the time of the labor movement. So I created some fictional, of course, characters. That, but the essence of them, it's very real. There's no one person that is exactly as it was or that is real, except for those generally known that I mentioned. But they're based on real people.
So what have you learned from your characters, if anything?
That's a very interesting question, because the words, the dialogues, the thoughts, their behavior came out of my fingers, typing them to the computer earlier, writing in
easy,
pen.
So, easy.
Right. But you know what? As I was writing, many times I would ask myself what he will say, what she will say. Or sometimes I would be in what I would think maybe some intellectual coma, maybe, that the things will be coming out of their mouth. I would be just a typist. It's really the character that is acting, and I'm just a passive typist. And it so happened that sometimes the day after or the morning after, I would read, and I would say, like, who said that? Well, it's very interesting. I'll give you just one example. There is two examples that are during the book. As I mentioned, the main character, Chaim, tries to define the meaning of his life and pursuit of define himself. And there's a period that he explores religion and tries to be a little bit more religious, as well as he affiliates with some very nationalistic, he finds actually extreme nationalistic movement, which is typical of that era after Six-Day War. And there is some debate between Eyal and Chaim, Eyal, the narrator. And Eyal tries to prove him that he's wrong. Maybe he's really afraid of losing his best friend. And then Chaim comes with some arguments, and he explains why he's doing and in support of his deeds. And then when I read, I said, like, wow, that's really interesting. How come I couldn't come with that idea? So, and I feel that indeed my political views, I was more to the right. I'm not leftist. And I don't think that I'm leftist, but I changed some of my political views as well as some behavioral views as the result. I think they just came and influenced me by what they said. And I don't know who put the words in their mouth. But
well, as you said in the beginning, you had a story boiling inside you that needed to come out. I guess it was sitting there for a very long time, and it's
very
exciting. It's very exciting
it
when it comes out.
It came up and down. And it's also the fighting. There are some characters that I describe. Chaim's brother is disabled very heavily. And at some point, he was fighting with me. He said, like, don't describe me this way. And I said, like, well, it's necessary to the story. But when we learn to know this character, I said hidden messages, we describe that actually it's not what we see. There are more aspects to that. In fact, in many places, in a way, I'm kind of tricking the reader, because I'm describing something, and as you explore more the character or behind, you discover many other things. In fact, until to the very end, and I won't tell you the real, but to the very end, you really don't know whether he really died, although it is explained in the first page that today we buried you, my friend.
It's quite exciting. We have about 5 minutes before we're going to a break. I know that there's so much to learn from your book and talk about. I think we'll talk about the time period when we come back. But let's right now, let's talk about a little bit of the research and the messages and possibly what are coming out of the book. What did you learn from the research, and what kind of messages are you trying to put out there?
Right. What I learned from the book is I did a lot of research, starting initially going over through some newspapers to remind myself of things, even going to the library and reading books or microfiche back then before Wikipedia, and then Google and Wikipedia. God bless Wikipedia and Google, just to make it accurate exactly to the date and exactly to the... Although, again, it's not a historical book. But then on the factual level, many things that I forgotten or I didn't know about songs, about events, military, political events, characters, who did what, etc. So it's a good learning. And in a way, it is a great hobby to really learn so much about it. But in a deeper way, I think I learned a lot about even myself, because the book is really a journey into myself, as much as it It is a journey of the character. It is a journey of myself. And I discovered some feelings, love feelings to that girl that I'm dating or I'm falling in love in that book, or friendship feelings to others, reminding myself to others. In fact, I can tell you about a situation. I met a friend, a good friend that he's mentioned briefly in the book also, who served with me. After many, many years, we met in Israel, and I told him that I started the book, and I told about a scene that happened to us in Sinai. And he says, "Oh my God, you bring to memory such things." He hugged me there like I was his Messiah. And I felt the same thing sometimes in the evening. I would say like to myself, like, "Oh, wow, that happened." So it is a lot of learning about yourself or about your memories, about your life, or the things that you wanted and you never achieved, of course.
And just briefly, what kind of messages then?
There are many messages. Although the book tries not to be a philosophical, psychological book that says, here is my message to you as a reader. In fact, some of the messages are both sides of the aisle. And as a reader, you can choose whichever messages speak to you, one or many messages. There are some messages that seem maybe simple, like, for instance, the meaning of life is life itself, is living the life to its fullest. It seems simple, but it's not that simple. Some other is devoting oneself to religious life or to some entity much bigger than us, such as country, mm-hmm. nation. There is a message I mentioned briefly before, is that some of the characters, you see them one way, and they developed throughout. Partly they developed because the narrator sees them differently, sees different other aspects. And the message there is perhaps don't judge people just by what you see on the first or by your shallow acquaintance with them. As you discover more about them, you will see that those are very different people, for better or worse. So there are many messages hidden. They're not dictated to the reader. And it's really absolutely the reader can choose any message that speak to them.
We're speaking with Shaike Artzi. He's a professional, but also today coming out as an author, written a novel. And you know, Shaike, I didn't ask you what the name of the novel is. Could you tell our listeners, please, the name of the novel?
The name of the novel is L'chaim, and it means in Hebrew, actually, a couple of things. Is to Chaim, the main character, devoted to the character that befallen in that war, and also to life, bringing him to life to us, and bringing life to him, describing the life after. And indeed, as I mentioned, many chapters, just a simple and quick maybe note, the book is going back and forth. It starts from the defining moment that his friend died and was buried, but it goes back to the beginning of their friendship, and then the book continues present and past. So in the past, the narrator describes to us about their events, their friendship, their love with the different girlfriends that they have, and the love between them as young people. But in the present chapters, those that are after the death of his friend, many times he speaks to him. Even he says, he describes somebody and he says, "Oh, she was wearing that robe. Do you remember?" Mm-hmm. Kind of like he's still there alive. So in a way, he is his eyes or his sentences, senses of his friend. He describes life to his dead friend. And that's the other meaning of L'chaim, things to life.
Fantastic. We're going to cut for a break, and then we'll be back with Shaike Artzi and to hear more about his novel called L'chaim and the time period. This is Israel is Real, and on WSMN, Nashwitz News and Talk.
שמרי נפשך מן השורף, מן החותך, מן הסמוך כמו אפר וכמו שמיים, מן הדומם, מן המחכה והמושך, והממית כמי באר ואש קיריים, נפשך שמרי ובינתך שיער ראשך, עורך שמרי, שמרי נפשך, שמרי חיי. ידוע וישר שבא לחסד ולרחמים לא למורא ולא לרחש.
This is WSMN, Nashua's... Sorry, this is WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk, and this is Israel is Real. And I want to just remind you that we are a community-supported program. We are supported by you, our listeners. And if you have a business, if you'd like to maybe support or sponsor a show, maybe a Hebrew word, maybe the Torah portion, or maybe one of our guests even, or just simply make a donation in support of Israel.
Or if you want to say to somebody, happy birthday.
Right.
By the radio. We are here to help you.
Right. $55 is a good amount. Anything over that, we need about $3,000 to stay on the air for another year. So if you're really wealthy and feeling it, you know, that you've made a killing in the stock market that we know is getting better and better every day, just feel free to drop us $3,000, and that'll keep us in business for another year. And we will also mention your name profusely throughout the show. So, and I'm not kidding. We will.
We will. Yes.
So we would like you to write a check now to Absolute Broadcasting and send it to our personal mailbox at Israel Israel, Post Office Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. Again, write a check now to Absolute Broadcasting. That's $3,000. Send it to Israel Israel, Post Office Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. And really, $3,000 isn't that much for a whole year of broadcasting. So think about it seriously. It's a good investment, tax break. And if you want more rates or you want more information, you can visit us again at our website, www.israelisraelnh.com. That's ISRAELISREALNH, that's for New Hampshire, .com. Sonia.
Have you heard the buzz? Rachel's music is touching hearts of listeners all around the world. To hear Rachel's unique sound and to book Rachel to perform for your live, just go to www.rachelmusic.net. That's
They're after me, watch out.
www.rahelmusic.net. And if you want really to see Rachel performing on live, you can come in August 24 between 5 to 7:45 for a rally for Israel, which Rachel is going to perform there very alive.
Manchester and Veterans Park.
Veterans Park,
between
yes.
5 to 7:45.
Yes.
And following that, there'll be a live screening. If you're interested in anything that Glenn Beck is doing in Israel, there will be that too. So go on the Vision website. Tell us about the Vision website.
Well, did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel? Did you know Israel is approximately about the size of New Jersey? And did you know who said the Greeks and the Romans are gone? Other people have sprung up, held their torch high for a time, but it burned out. The Jews saw them all, survived them all. All things are mortal, but the Jew. All other forces passed, but he remains. What is the secret of his immortality? So, Mark Twain, in 1898, said it.
Wow.
And if you would like to receive Vision's emails alert and be informed about Vision educational activities and opportunities, please visit Vision website at www.newhampshireforisrael.org. That's www.nh4israel.org.
And again, that rally is it's called Stand for Israel. That will be in Manchester, August 24th, from 5 to 7:45. So please come out. If you're in support of Israel in any way, do come out to Manchester, Veterans Park, August 24th, between 5 to 8, and participate with us. There'll be tons of speakers, and I'll be playing music, and there'll be great, great things happening. Vendors, you can learn all about all sorts of supportive organizations who support Israel. So do come out. This is Israel Israel, WSMN, Nashua's News and Talk.
את לילותיי היו היו ערבי געגועים היו ימים טרופים היה כאב חבוי.
And we're back. This is, again, is Israel is Real. You can find us on the internet at israelisrael.nh.com. ISRAELISREALNH.com. And we're back speaking with now computer science technician, now turned author, Shaiki. I always want to say Shaiki Ophir because Shaiki Ophir was a very well known actor in Israel. But Shaiki Artzi, yeah. And he's speaking about his book called L'Chaim, and we had talked about the characters, about a little bit about the book. Shaiki, I know that you had been a soldier for many years, between the years of 1967 to 1973, and again in 1982, both as a soldier and a reservist in the Israel Defense Forces, known as the IDF, the Israel Army. Tell us a little bit about that time period and what it's like to be a soldier. Let's start with that.
Okay.
And also what it's like to be a citizen. How is this? I know that Israeli soldier's life and Israeli civilian life is very intermingled. Tell us about this a little bit.
In Israel, most of the men at the age 18 to 21 have to serve in the army. It's 3 years mandatory. Of course, it doesn't include everyone. Some populations are exempt or for personal reasons. 3 years, wherever you can fit. And then you are in the reserve forces. And I myself served in the army for 3 years. And then come the Yom Kippur War, I was not mobilized. I volunteered because I felt that it is maybe the end of the state as we known, and served another 202 days at that war. And then again, I was mobilized just as I was packing to come here to University of Wisconsin to pursue my master's and PhD. I was mobilized to the war in Lebanon for another 40 days. And in between, training or some service here and there for another 30 to 40 days a year in general.
If you don't mind, tell us a little bit about the life of an Israeli soldier, because it's quite different than the life of soldiers anywhere else in the world.
It is very different. For one thing, and it comes also very clearly in the book and myself, how I felt, is that I would say that most of the young people, if they had a choice, they wouldn't want to serve in the army. They wouldn't want to go to a war. They wouldn't want to fight with Arabs. They wouldn't want to kill or to be forced to kill. Of course, they wouldn't want to be killed to start with. And however, I think that the majority of soldiers go for patriotic, very simple, it's not in big words, but very simple, to put it really in simple words, it's fighting for the love, the life of their loved ones. And indeed, in 1967, as I mentioned, as a student in Jerusalem as a kid, being bombarded by the Jordanian artillery, and then during the attrition war, although far 200 miles or 300 miles from the center of Israel, but still feeling that we are defending the life or the country. It's not just the country as an abstract term or a big term, but it's more of my parents who went through the Holocaust, and now it's my turn to defend them. They were defenseless back then. Now it's my turn to defend. And so in the book, there are many situations. The soldiers just don't give a damn about life in the army or the army. But when they're called for mission to patrol around the Suez and they think that there is some penetration of a terrorist group or of a commando unit, Egyptian commando unit, they are really fighting. And they know that they may be killed, but they feel they really believe in that. However, as soldiers, I remember most of my time, and it also is reflected very strongly in the book, what they are interested in is what other youth at that age, 18 to 21, are interested all around the world, back then and here. Is going to dance in the college dancing hall, dating this girl, exchanging perhaps some tips about different girls, about different matches, arguing very, very strongly about whose team is better, Beitar Yerushalayim, Hapoel Tel Aviv, yeah. some of the leading teams in Israel. And again, it comes again, telling jokes. Some of those jokes are very childish. In fact, there is a scene in my book that they are patrolling around the Suez, and everything is so beautiful. The desert is waking up, and the sun is just coming out of its night sleep, and the water is so calm. And all of a sudden, they think they discovered a commando unit, and they fire, and the thought that goes into Eyal, the narrator's mind, of he could get killed, and he reflects of other situation, one or two, that he and his friend were, and the situation that his friend actually lost his life. And then after that, they discovered actually that it wasn't, they just thought it was not lighted enough at the time. But then they go back to their fort, and they meet their friends, and they start telling jokes about this, you know, they like, the Johnny jokes here, or the Moshele jokes in Israel, like kids. And they discuss the events between Golda and President Nixon, and they laugh about those things.
Why you choose this period?
I think that this is one of the most, or of the few, very defining periods in the life of Israel, and perhaps also of the Jewish nation in recent decades or last century, the time between 67 or before 67, when the main three neighbors of Israel were really closing on Israel, Syria, Egypt, and Jordan. And the feeling was that this is the end of the story of the Zionist movement. It was 19 years coming back, creating, recreating the state of Israel after 2,000 years, and that may be the very end. And the glorious victory in just 6 days, and the euphoria after that, the feeling like peace is there. Moshe Dayan, who is quoted, the general, the defense minister, was quoted in the book, and so is the main character, that says, we'll give peace and we'll get peace very, very soon. And then realizing very, very soon thereafter, when a President Gamal Abdel Nasser of Egypt started the attrition war, that it was a continuous war. Every day you hear the news, every day you see new caskets of soldiers coming back. It's almost, to in a way, it really, I said before that it's different era, different time, but it really resembles our time, our soldiers in the state coming back from Iraq or from Afghanistan. So it was very, very stressful at time. And the 1973 that is mentioned just briefly at the end of the book, it is touched upon also in the second book that I should mention that this is the first of a trilogy that I want, a different periods of time of the main characters. And the topic is somewhat shifted. It's different for each book. But that war is mentioned, the 73 war, the Yom Kippur, also when Israel was surprised by Egypt and Syria, and the feeling was that this is the end.
So do you think that your book, it's significant even for today events?
Absolutely.
Speaking locally and speaking, internationally.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I love challenges, and writing the book was a big challenge. In fact, as I mentioned, also playing with characters and tricking sometimes the reader to some, and giving so many messages in the book. But also, one key aspect was that the book tries to be very, very accurate to that period. You almost walk in the period. Even the guns that they were using, or the words that they were using, the slang, the curses that they were using, the songs. If you hear a song by Bob Dylan or, say, by Chava Halberstam, you bet that it was sung there. If I said the new song, it really appeared like 2 months before that particular time of that particular chapter. But at the other, on the other end, that was my challenge, to make it relevant and meaningful to today's life. And certain things, for instance, terrorism, that started back in Israel. It started also in the 50s, but in different form, with the Fedayoons attacking Israeli civilians. But the PLO and the other Palestinian movements, as we know them today, started roughly around end of 66, 67. And it's still with us. Maybe the big difference is that back then it was all around Israel, maybe some Jewish organizations, maybe here and there. There were some anarchist movements in Germany and in France, but it spread around the world. Now we see, we were attacked here in the States almost 10 years ago. We saw murderous attacks in Madrid, London, France, just recently in Norway. So maybe that's a big difference. But the question of how to treat those terrorists that were captured, not that were killed in mission, but they were captured, can you treat them as humans after all that they were dead? It's still with us. And there's a scene in the book that the hero is very humanistic, and he argues that, no, we cannot take the life of anybody, no matter how murderous or what acts they did. Yet when he is a soldier and he has to fight in combat, he will commit his duty and he will fight, and he maybe may kill, and in fact he was killed. So those questions are still with us, are still with soldiers that go to Afghanistan, go to Iraq, or every person that lives his life as a youth here in Oshawa in high school. Not only a soldier.
This is the dilemma that we face. I think if you're a moralistic country, if you're a moral person, and you're holding on to those morals, and then you're forced to defend yourself,
right,
and go to war, it's right. It's very difficult.
Right. And the same, the love, it goes quite a lot into the love between the main hero and his girlfriend called Ophira in the book, and between the narrator and the sister of his best friend, Ruhama. I won't tell you the end of that love affair, but it goes ups and down. And those things are very much with us still today. Things change. Right. The technology, for instance, there's a scene that kind of, I'm laughing whenever I myself read it, about they have some character there that is one of the pioneers working in the computer industry. And he tells about this advanced technology, punched cards. And now when we hear about it, well, we laugh. But or the computer that is huge, the size of his room. Now this computer is on our cell phone 10 times bigger, right? But so these things change the way the tools themselves that change, but the way that we use tools, the way that we communicate, those dilemmas, or even the pursuit of defining one's life. What will I do when I graduate of high school, or when I finish my military service, or whatever service I am?
And it's kind of proud. You are very proud of what you are doing, and yes. I mean, always. So.
Right. And that's one of also the messages of whatever you choose, what you define for yourself.
Exactly.
That's what you should be proud of, or that's exactly. The meaning of life, actually, to define to yourself what is the meaning of life.
It intrigues me, and I don't think Americans can fully appreciate that in the time period that you're speaking, you yourself and maybe your character in the book actually went through maybe three, maybe four wars.
Yep.
in a very short time as a youth.
Yeah.
As a youth, as an 18-year-old.
And much more so when you are a Holocaust survivor.
Right.
So it even has much bigger impact on you that, would I lose my life or my friends, like my uncles and my aunts that were defenseless, or would I be able to defend my parents after all they went through?
And I think that this is a very influential, I don't really know how to put it, but it's the reason why Israelis live so passionately, how they hold on to life.
Yes.
And we really live for the day and make things happen and make things grow and build the country, and it's all so important.
Very much so, and also it comes through the book, and maybe again one of the messages is that despite all the stressful events around the political, the economic nowadays, and the military back then, and even now sometimes, people really want to enjoy the life of youth or adults. Maybe I can mention a friend of mine who is heading the film faculty in Tel Aviv University, a professor of film and literature that was here in the States, was educated here in the States in Ohio, and had a very good position, very good house, and he moved to Israel. And when I met him and I asked him, like, why, Ilan, why did you do that? Explain to me. And he said, you know, my quality of life here in Israel is much higher. And I said, like, how can you tell that? Because there back then was the Intifada, another sort of attrition war with the Palestinians. And he just described what he was doing last week randomly. He described, and I said, well, I don't do that in the States for maybe 2-3 months, if at all. And he says, you know, that most Israelis, because if we put it simple, in simple terms, many times they don't know really what the next day will bring. They really try to live life to its fullest. And it's maybe kind of the Jewish inheritance, maybe it's Israeli. You will see that also with high tech, trying to do the newer things, trying to experience many things. And in a way, also, the book is about experiencing new things, new loves, or new ideas.
To keep moving forward. To keep progressing. We have about one more minute with you, Shaiky. We're speaking with Shaiky Artzi, the author of a book, upcoming book called L'chaim. It will be produced in Hebrew, published in Hebrew, and then in English at a later date. Shaiky, it's so exciting to have you here and hear about the book and all your experiences. And it makes me want to pick up that book any minute and just really know all the details.
Hopefully
I can't wait till
soon.
It comes out. Any final words for our listeners in the meantime? And by the way, anybody who wants to know further about this, just contact us through the website. We'll get you in touch with Shaiky if you're interested in purchasing his book and knowing more. So what can you tell our listeners some final thoughts?
I don't want to sound like preacher, but the things that I learned from the book, as I said, is really define to yourself what you are and what you want. And it can be, there is in the book also a scene that they discuss. What if you have a goal in your life and at the end of your life, you realize that actually it wasn't the goal that you wanted. And the point is, like, it doesn't matter. As long as you lead your life to some goals, or you define or you control your life in a way that you can, that's what is interesting, that you have something to wake up to do, or something that you plan to do. That's a bad thing. I don't want to sound like a preacher, but
oh, you don't. Don't worry. We want to learn from you everything we can.
Thank
you, Shaiky Artzi. You're always going to be Shaiky Ophir for me, but that's okay. You're still Shaiky Artzi.
I wish I could be as big talent as he was.
Indeed. We're going to turn now to our Torah portion, which is Ve'et Hanan, which is also Shabbat. It's the Shabbat Nachamu. So let's hear something about what it says in the Torah.
We read the Shema prayer in this week's portion, Ve'et Hanan, as the verse says, "Hear, O Israel, God is our God. God is the one and the only." The Shema is the most important verse in the Torah because it defines the Jewish nation. We are a nation which believes that God is the master of the universe. The Torah commentator Rambam explained this principle of Jewish faith in the following way. "I believe in perfect faith that God is one. There is no unity that is in any way like God's. God alone is our God. God was, God is, and God will ever be." When one looks at the first sentence, for example, of the Shema in a Torah scroll, one notices that two letters are larger than others. The final letters, Ayin of the first word, Shema, and Daled of the last word, Echad, are in large print. The Hebrew letters Ayin and Daled spell in Hebrew word Ed, which means witness. By reading the Shema, a Jew is testifying to God's mastery over the world. Therefore, let us recite the Shema every day and cry out our perfect faith in God, the one and only God. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. We are Rachel.
And Sonia.
Where is she? And Sonia. And today also with Shaiky Artzi. And we are talking about his book, L'chaim. So please contact us to find more about that. This is Israel is Real. Our theme song again, Hinei Matov, is my own version. You can find me at rachelmusic.net. We're on the air every Friday, 10 to 11 in the morning, on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. Don't forget, there is a big rally coming up August 24th in support of Israel, Stand With Israel. If you want to find out about that, go to nh4israel.org, nh4israel.org. And what more can I tell you?
Don't forget the checks for us.
The checks, right. $3,000 will keep us on the air for our entire year. $55 will get you a weekly support. But any amount is great. Well, again, please just go to our website to find out how to donate and support us. And in that way, you are making a difference in supporting Israel. Again, www.israelisraelnh.com. And we would like to say
Shabbat Shalom.
Foundation when the winds of change is shift.
May your heart always be joyful. May your song always be sung. And may you stay.